Right. Sorry for being late. This time it actually wasn't my fault. So, first of all, the important things. Hello, everybody. Hi. Oh, some at least were here in my previous session, it looks like. So who was not here in my previous session? Okay, so I don't care about you guys. It's okay. Now, I can feel the laugh already here in this room. That's great. We had some technical problems. The cloud was broken. And doing a session on the cloud and doing a session on the Windows Azure platform is a little bit tricky if you don't have cloud, right? But the wonderful technicians made it happen with a few minutes late, but hopefully the internet connection will be stable and we will be rocking and rolling now. Okay, great. So for those, well, for everybody besides these two guys who were not in the previous session, you remember that nice little, not little, but young man here in the front row who was trying to run my demo with a publish and subscribe eventing over the service bus? I told you it was his fault. He only had the .NET 4 client profile installed. And a bunch of the features that I was using in there required assemblies from the .NET full framework. Therefore, unfortunately, it did not work, but I tried it with another machine and I can tell you it works. If you want to have the samples, I tried to put them onto my blog. Hopefully not forgetting, before I put them up there to rotate the shared secret keys in order, for you to play around with your credentials, with your service namespace and with your, stuff. So this session here is kind of, it's kind of the counterpart of the previous one or of the first one. So the first one was about hybrid features, hybrid communication, hybrid usage of the cloud, right? This now is more or less, well, the cloud itself. The session on the service bus was talking about with the cloud, through the cloud, enabling a software plus services, on-premise plus cloud features architecture. And this session is basically or mainly talking about running applications inside of the Windows Azure Compute Cloud using features from Windows Azure Compute. We will be looking at deployment, development stuff. We will be looking at SQL Azure and things like that. Okay. So this is not going to be an introduction of the whole Windows Azure platform, and this is not going to be covering everything that is possible, because that's not possible. Okay? Great. So, but again, it's the last day. It's the last session. Can you do it again for me? Really loud? Really, really loud? Hello, everybody. Hi.
Hi.
Wonderful. Great. So let's start. The original title, which is also in the program, is Real World Azure Elasticity from On-Premise to Cloud and Back. Well, it turns out I changed my mind. I will do VB6 programming for noobs, okay? No, I won't. But the problem was with the wording of real world Azure. As we know, the whole cloud thing is very, very early. The whole cloud idea, well, maybe not, but the whole cloud offerings, especially the platform as a service offerings as we see them today, they are still in their early days. And talking already now about real world Azure, I don't know whether that's a wise thing. So I changed it a little bit, and I named it to Windows Azure by example, right? Elasticity from on-premise to cloud and back, question mark, because that's an important point that we should also cover and talk about towards the end of the session. So this will be a demonstration-heavy, hopefully demonstration-heavy session, because if the internet doesn't work, then it won't be any session at all. But, in German we say Daumen drücken, cross your fingers that it will work. Great. So my name is Christian Weyer. I'm from a very, very small company. We have our world headquarter in Germany, but we have consultants, technical consultants from Austria, from the UK, most of us are actually also located and living and primarily working in Germany, but we usually are always on site with our clients and our customers. We also have a couple of customers in Belgium. We have customers in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, of course. We have customers in the UK and also in Scandinavia. And what we do is we're doing hands-on technical consultancy when it comes to distributed application architectures. And that means it can be very technical, it can be very abstract, it can be very architecture wise. It can be hands down, like, okay, all day in Visual Studio. It can be like a little bit more fluffy all day at the flip chart with the architects, you know. So I think for the past 10 plus years, so for me, it's actually 14 years now, we have been dealing with different technologies and different approaches, different ideas about building software and especially building distributed application architectures. And going into the cloud, people, going into the cloud is now, for me, a natural next step, right? If I have been thinking and living the ideas and the mantra of services and service orientation for years now, then the cloud is the logical next step. Boom. And all of a sudden, you are in the cloud. Of course, you need to think about a lot of things there. Not only about the legal aspects, not only about the data sovereignty aspects, not just about the pricing aspects. These are all very, 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 very essential and very important. But of course, software-wise, we also need to care about architectural findings and architectural patterns and do's and don'ts. I don't want to use the word or the term best practice anymore. You know why? Best practice always needs a context. Okay? If I'm on stage and I say best practice of XYZ, I actually need to put it into a context. Because how could I propose to you a best practice if I don't know which kind of product or project you're working on? How could I know that this is the best practice? There is a small thin layer of best practices across technologies. Okay, we can agree on that. But otherwise, it always needs to put into context for a certain and given situation, for a project, for a product, for the requirements of this project, the team that is working on it, and so forth, right? So this is not a best practices talk, but it has some practices in it from client project that we have been doing in Germany. So there are three real projects that are currently using Windows Azure, and one or two proof of concepts and, well, playground projects where we have developed one or the other approach in order to make your life in the cloud a little bit easier. Again, as you have been here, my email address, christian.weyer@thinktecture.com. I have already received one email. I saw it in the inbox. I will answer it hopefully at the weekend or maybe tomorrow. You're always welcome. So if you have questions regarding these sessions here at Tech Days Belgium or any other problem, feel free and I will be happy to answer you. So who knows Geek and Poke? I'm a big fan of Geek and Poke, right? This is something that you can read and see all over the IT industry these days, huh? You know, the cloud can solve every problem. Did you know that? Well, they are not telling us that it will maybe cause new ones, but it can solve every problem. There was a buzzword 5 years ago that could solve also every problem. Who can remember that one? Yeah, BPM is, I guess, a little longer than 5 years. Hey, there you go. SOA, S-O-A. You know what S-O-A means in Dutch, right? Yes, okay. And I can tell you, SOA or discussing about SOA can be a real disease from time to time, depending on the actual partner that you're talking to in order to get the discussion going. So people are thinking, oh, everything has grown so complex and I cannot manage it and all our processes here in-house. What should we do? And well, the answer is, boom, put them into the cloud. And everything will be easy. So, no, it won't. right? Like, let the clouds make your life easier. Yes, let's make the cloud or the clouds make our life easier. But it's not as easy as taking an application and move it into the cloud. So this session is therefore not really about taking an application as it is and just move it into the cloud. Well, I can do that, and I will partly do that or partly show that. But it's actually cloudification, cloudifying an application architecture, trying to get the best out of the cloud's, well, value-add features in order to use it in our application architectures and in our applications. That's the idea. Great. So we will go for a short trip through Windows Azure. Quick hands, who is hosting? I know, I asked that before, but now it's a new session. Who is using Windows Azure Compute in production today? For the record,
one.
Who is using Azure Storage today? Okay, two. Who is using, and now the big question, SQL Azure? Okay, two, three. These are all those guys who are using Azure Compute, by the way. Who is using the App Fabric, like Access Control Service? Who is using the Service Bus? Well, after this day, of course, you will be using it all. Huh? But now, just one. Okay. As we can see, there is a lot of potential in the cloud. and I hope that you will grok and take over this vast potential that is out there and up there in the cloud in order to build awesome applications and systems. Okay, so we will take a look at some compute stuff. We will take a look at some storage stuff, at deployment. We will take a look at SQL Azure stuff. And just do a small journey through some of the parts of the Windows Azure platform. In fact, content-wise, there are 14 slides just, or maybe less, I don't know. Yeah, it's something like 14 slides. So I try to do a lot of live and demo and show you stuff and explain and go over the portals and go over port and configuration to take a look at what is in there and what not. Great. So, Windows Azure itself. I cannot count the discussions I had and I still have with people saying, yeah, Azure, that's just hosting. Others can do that way better. Huh. You know? Others are way more reliable, huh? You know? Look at that company starting with a big A, uh-huh? And ending with Amazon, huh? They can do way better, mm-hmm? All those websites hosted on there are always online, uh-huh? What happened last week? But that's not a problem of Amazon. That was actually not a problem of Amazon. That was a problem of those companies leveraging the cloud, not understanding fully the cloud. The problem with Amazon, well, there were several, I guess, but as far as I read it was that the companies using EC2 were not using a very important feature like availability zones. Okay? So we have something like this also. Well, it's not 100% the same, and it's not really comparable, but we have something similar in Windows Azure. So if you want to succeed in the cloud, and if you bet a big part of your business in the cloud, you better understand the cloud. It's just like saying, oh, I have been doing Access development for 15 years now. Let's just move over to SQL Server. It should be the same. Yeah, it's not, I guess. It's not. With Windows Azure, we don't have hosting. With Windows Azure, we don't care about the infrastructure. So with one sentence, what is Windows Azure? Windows Azure is a cloud platform for running our applications or services in the cloud. That's it. There is no mentioning of a virtual machine, no mentioning of a server, no mentioning of some hardware, no mentioning of a load balancer, no mentioning of whatever you would care about if you would do self-hosting or even get it hosted by some friend or a big hoster company. Okay? So this is why all those cloud experts refer to it as PaaS, platform as a service, as opposed to infrastructure as a service. Okay? If you don't want that, or let's put it the other way around, if you want to have full control over your VMs, full control over the operating system, if you want to do everything on your own and have the full power, then maybe Windows Azure is not the first choice for you. Today, right? Today, it's pure PaaS. That's an important point. So, if we accept this fact that Windows Azure is about running applications and running services in the cloud, then, as I already said, or I already mentioned, running a service-based, service-oriented, web-based or not web-based application in Windows Azure is a pure logical step. If you are dealing with homegrown, older systems, monolithic systems, then there may be some problems for you moving actually into the cloud. Currently, I'm doing a proof of concept for a big customer in Germany, and they have a lot of, websites based on IIS and ASP.NET. They have a lot of Java-based stuff based on Tomcat and based on Apache. They have a lot of other strange file-based data systems and data sources. And of course, you can do that, but you need to understand how to actually move this existing application without having to change anything, or at least not to change a lot, into Windows Azure, into the cloud, and what may be the problems around it. So we managed to just, and I try to show a lightweight version of this mechanism later on, we managed to deploy ASP.NET web applications and updates to this website, as well as Tomcat, new versions of Tomcat and their websites, to Windows Azure by dragging and dropping a zip file into a folder, and 15 seconds later it runs in the cloud. And I'm not kidding. Yes, but you need to understand what is going on there, and you need to understand maybe the implications of this. Okay? And one point that I had to learn very, 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 very hard is you need to know about costs. If you are a developer, great. If you are an architect, great. But you need to care about the cost model of the cloud. And it doesn't matter which cloud it is. If you want to make business with the cloud, you need to be cost aware. That's what I call COA. Maybe the next wave. Cost-oriented architecture. Okay? That does not mean that you need to completely nail down your application architecture based on the current pricing model, but you need to have some exit points for your architecture when you see, oh crap, now my costs are going to explode. How could I fix this? And for this, you first need to be aware of the cost structure. And the cost structure in Azure, per se, for me, it's obvious. But you cannot very good control it at runtime. That's another issue, right? If you take a look at the tables, what a compute or actually a service hour costs, what storage costs, what data in and data out of a data center costs, it's all there. You can do your math. But there is no good means of controlling and monitoring this at runtime currently. That's a very, very important point that you need to keep in mind. So, Windows Azure Platform, quickly three parts. I talked about the service bus, which is part of the App Fabric in my first session. Then there is Windows Azure Compute, as we call it, and Windows Azure Storage, which is, the first part is running applications and services in the cloud. The second one is having storage capabilities in the cloud. Okay? And storage like blob storage, very important. And this is actually very tempting for a lot of customers out there, that you have just some kind of, let's call it a file bucket in the cloud, where you can put your data in and where you can get the data out from. Yes, this is nothing that Microsoft has invented. The other big cloud platform vendor has this for years. How is that called? It's S3. So the simple storage service, right? But what Microsoft has invented, for me at least, is the holistic platform, a platform that spawns everything that I can envision, well, idea-wise and envision, that spawns the whole cloud. So we can run in the cloud, we can store in the cloud, we can use our existing databases in the cloud, and we can actually talk through the cloud with cloud applications or through the cloud with other applications. So this complete platform, yeah, it's not yet done. It's an early V1 maybe. Yeah, I totally agree. But the whole vision and the end-to-end aspect of the Windows Azure platform is very, very, very interesting. And I think this is something that no other cloud platform vendor has today. And this is something that I like a lot, this end-to-end aspect. So why go to the cloud? Is anybody here who wants to stand up and talk to the others and say, why should I ever go to the cloud? Oh, I forgot I'm in Belgium. Okay, let's try it. It's not always about super high fidelity and scalability. So I was talking to a colleague and we discussed some super scalability needs for a customer. And yes, there may be customers that need to scale up or spin up new instances in 2 minutes and spin them down or put them down or turn them down again also in, I don't know, 1 minute or 2 minutes. If you have these kinds of elasticity needs today, yeah, well, then maybe Windows Azure today is not for you, okay? What is very, very tempting for people is that they can focus on their development model, that they can focus on what they have learned and done for years. Yes, they need to learn a little bit more architecture-wise. Yes, they need to learn a little bit more about costs. And yes, they need to learn a little bit more about the rough edges of this early cloud thingy, okay? But what is really tempting is that you can just write an application, deploy it, and if you need, you can even scale it out to multiple instances, multiple virtual machines behind the scenes, and have all the load being handled for you, right? You don't have to care about test systems. You don't have to care about setting up all the hardware stuff, about patching the operating system, about, I don't know, setting up the load balancing environment if a new node comes up or an existing one goes down. All these infrastructural things, if you don't need or want to deal with them, then Windows Azure may be very, very interesting. And one typical use case or one typical scenario is predictable bursting. That means that we know, for example, based on season numbers, when we will have a high load and when we will have a low load or a lower load. So we know our peaks, the positive as well as the negative peaks. And if we have a scenario like that, I want to say that cost-wise and programming model-wise and deployment-wise, Windows Azure shines a lot. It shines in a bright light. Because this is the scenario that at least what we have identified over the past month fits very, very well into this whole idea of PaaS and how Windows Azure implements it. So that means, coming back to the title of the session, elasticity. Elasticity does not always mean elasticity at runtime, but being able to, in an elastic way, bring an application into the cloud, and then in the cloud, the application can, in an elastic way, scale and maybe come back. And, well, not sure whether it will come back or may come back or has to come back to on-premise, but there should be at least a possible way to come back as well. So let's take a look. We have a very, very simple sample application. This sample application is MVC Music Store. So MVC Music Store is from CodePlex. It's that one here. It's just a sample ASP.NET MVC application that deals with some, I don't know, music and records and artists and tracks and albums. You get it, okay? I just chose it because it's a public sample and you don't have to ask me to give you my sample code. Just go to the CodePlex site and download it. So this is a typical web application, if I may so say so. So it's running in IIS 7.5. It's using SQL Server 2008, or R2 in this case, and it's designed to be a stateless application. So they are not using a lot, if any, session state. Everything comes through the data access layer from the database. Maybe you can incorporate some caching layer into it, but otherwise it looks like a fine candidate for the cloud, right? The only thing that we should think about is the images, because the images are not coming from a central storage currently, but they are actually just embedded in the web application in an images folder. Okay? So if we look at the application here, and we take a look at it in the development web server, it's just some ASP.NET MVC. And the problem with the covers is that they are copyrighted, of course. Therefore, we only have this standard default cover image. But otherwise, it's just an MVC application. Okay. I already have a version of this application, not only in the development web server, but also and already in IIS 7.5. So in IIS 7.5, I have the version that I already changed for Azure. So let's see whether this now works, because it did not work before I started. Connecting. Here we go. So this is now running on localhost, but as you can see, if I click, there is a significant delay. Can you see this? What do you think is happening? This application is running locally, but using data from SQL Azure. This is what I see, or the wish I see and hear a lot. Oh, cool. Now I finally have a public database in the cloud. Let's just put my Access and VB front ends in front of it. Is this a good idea? He says no, but why? Yeah, well, the first one obviously is delays and latency, of course. The second one is, what are we going to do here? We are running a local application to talk to a remote SQL Server-based service in the cloud. And SQL Server standard protocol is TDS over TCP. Is this a protocol that was originally made for the internet? Usually not, right? And it turns out that running SQL Azure databases and doing your common ADO.NET based data access code against SQL Azure may put you into some weird situation, because SQL Azure as a database service may behave totally different than you would expect from a SQL Server. There are several error conditions that may occur, which you actually should handle, because SQL Azure may be under high stress or whatever, may do a connection drop, stuff like that, right? So pretending that SQL Azure as a database service is just yet another SQL Server may not be a good idea, especially if you are far away from SQL Azure. That's what we call the code far scenario. Like Access front end talking to SQL Azure, and then exceptions and nothing works and okay? So that's a little bit problematic. Otherwise, let's take this application and Azureize it. So let's move it into Azure. Let's take a look at Azure, what we can do with Azure and in Azure and so on. So first one, we need to get this somehow into the cloud. Okay, I have prepared this. So there is an application or an instance of this already running in the cloud, and it's called Music Store. And this music store is running up there under mvcmusicstore.cloudup.net. So this is now the application straight from Windows Azure. If it's slow, that does not mean that Windows Azure is slow, but most obviously it could be our internet connection. Yeah, but it's okay, actually. Okay, so this is a fully deployed copy of MVC Music Store, which is using a SQL Azure database, we'll get there, which is hosted inside of Windows Azure Compute. So how could we proceed to get there? So the first thing is create a cloud project. So, I don't know, let's put it into ctemp music store. Music store. You know the most important folder on the hard drive? Ctemp. Do not ever delete it. You can delete C Windows, but never ctemp. So what you usually get is now the option to choose for a cloud template. We don't. We just say okay. So now we have the skeleton cloud project. And what we are now going to do is we are going to add an existing website to it. So add existing project, which can be found here. So this is adding the project to our Azure project. And what we now need to do is to tell the Azure project that there is a website that we are going to use and which we want to put into Azure. So we say add web role project in solution. And we say, yes, it's the MVC Music Store. And now we have a freshly set up solution which we can work with in order to move Azure, the MVC Music Store into Windows Azure. So that was actually quite an easy one, but there are some tidbits in there. First, this application is running on MVC 3. MVC 3 is not in the cloud. So you need to make sure that all the assemblies that you are referencing in your Windows Azure project are either in Windows Azure already, which means .NET 4 based profile, so the full profile, not the client profile, or you set copy local to true. Okay? So the world famous, I don't know, for example, where is it? Here. Copy local, right? Either you do it like this, or if you want to have a more reproducible setup for your cloud instances based on your cloud images, is the following. What you can do is you can create a startup task, and in that startup task, you can actually install MVC. What does it mean? When I spin up a new instance in Windows Azure, there is a new instance created for a new image. That means there is some startup code that is being executed at startup. That's why the name is startup, right? So I can inject some of my logic and some of my code into the startup phase through so-called startup tasks. And these startup tasks allow me, for example, to install whatever I want. So if you have some COM component that you need to register with RecSVR32 or some other installer that can be silently installed, you can hook that up with startup tasks. Okay? So usually, if I do production robust deployments, I make sure that I always deploy everything as a startup task to have the exact same behavior on each and every instance that is in the game. Okay? Great. So another very important thing is you need to understand the Azureisms in this game. So the Azureisms means look at what was created. It was created a service definition and a service configuration file. So the service definition file looks like a bunch of XML stuff. But the important things here are, for example, that you can on the role, and the role is an abstraction of your application in Windows Azure. On the role, you can decide which virtual machine size you want to use. Okay? So this is, by default, this is small, but you can choose any other virtual machine size, which may be interesting when we talk about scalability. So the discussion scale up versus scale out. Okay? So with the size of the virtual machine here specified, you can decide to scale up. The problem is what? In Windows Azure, everything that is part of the definition file, of the CSDEF file, is part of the image building process. That means if you change anything here in CSDEF, you need to fully redeploy your application. Which is not what I want. I want to have a stable base, well, base image, a base definition, and then just put updates into that running base image. This is what I'm going to show at the end, by the way. Okay. The other one is the corresponding configuration file. So the corresponding configuration file also looks like a bunch of XML, but here the important thing is, look at that one here. By default, OS family is 1. I always recommend to choose OS family 2. OS family 1 means Windows Server 2008 SP2 based. OS family 2 means Windows Server 2008 R2 based. Okay? Which means, especially for websites, choose between IIS 7 and IIS 7.5, which may be a big difference for you. Okay? So, usually I switch that from 1 to 2, and I keep OS version as a star. OS version as a star is that feature of Windows Azure that is really, really, really nice, if you can afford it. It means it will automatically patch your system when a new Windows Azure patch day has come. Because they are releasing, I don't know, sometimes it's every 4 weeks, sometimes it's something like 8 weeks. They are releasing new OS versions with the highly critical patches into the cloud. And if you play the cloud rules, they will automatically update you. What does it mean, the cloud rules? Who did read the service level agreements of Windows Azure? No one? Okay. In there, there are numbers like 99.95, 99.97, depending on the service. And then there is something printed there that says, in order to receive this service level agreement, or in order to fulfill the SLA, you need to have 2 instances of your role running. Okay? That means any serious application running in Windows Azure needs at least 2 instances, which is double the cost. Because with 2 instances, they can first take one down to upgrade it and update it, then bring it up, and then take the other one down. And then the star of OS version makes a lot of sense. But please be aware, seeing conference sessions where they put up one instance because in order to save money, that doesn't cut it. The SLA says clearly at least 2, period. And that goes for any role. So if you have a big system designed like 2 web roles, 3 worker roles, so 2 web roles, 3 worker roles, 5 roles, which is the current limit, by the way, for one deployment. So I have 5 roles. That means I need to multiply it by 2, so I have 10 instances that I need to have at least running in order to get the service level agreement. Okay? And now go to Excel and do the calculations. Okay? Wonderful. A very important note from my side is the local compute environment is nice, but it's not really super duper useful. So yes, you can do F5 now, and it spins up this GUI, and you have a local development environment that mimics the cloud. But people, come on. It's not building virtual machines for us. It's simulating the behavior through processes. It's running elevated.
Huh?
It's running elevated. That means we run as an elevated user, which means that we can do everything in our code. If you just write something like create new event log, it will just work in the compute emulator. In the Azure cloud up there, it will fail if you write it in your web application. Okay? So there is a big, big difference, especially when it comes to security features between the actual Azure cloud and the local compute environment. So let's take a look at how we could deploy this application. So what we usually see is go to Visual Studio, configure it in the service definition file, configure your configuration file, and then say publish. Huh? How much easier could it be? So right click, publish, choose your subscription. Let's choose this one. Now it's loading all the information from the Azure management service, like our compute and our storage services. Well, and now I could say, okay, let's move it there. Great. Huh. What does it mean? Does it mean that I always need to have Visual Studio in my fingers and in my hands in order to deploy new versions of this application? Well, it means two things. First, no, you don't, because you can perfectly automate this. You can perfectly integrate this with your build steps. You can perfectly integrate this with any build system that you are using, whether that's TFS or not, or cruise control, or what else you are using. Okay? That's the first point. The second point is, I'm not sure I always want to deploy and publish a completely new image, a completely new role. I only need to deploy a new role if I change something in here. Okay? So if I change something in the service definition file, then I need to change, and then I need to deploy newly. So if I create new endpoints, for example, if I want new imports, then I need to deploy. And that makes sense. But if you have quite a stable, let's call it infrastructural setup for the platform as a service idea, then you may only be interested to update your assemblies, to update your websites, to put new version of a website into Windows Azure. And this is actually something that is not yet in the platform, so you have to build it yourself. But I have some sample implementation for this in order to show it to you. So what we will be doing now is let's use the prepared version of Azure Music Store and actually deploy it. Let's deploy it into Music Store Tech Days when it has loaded. So, Music Store Tech Days production, and let's use the thing texture storage. Okay, great. So now it's packaging up everything. It's creating a CSPKG file, which is then uploaded to my blob storage account, which I specified. And from there, the master of disaster in Azure, how is he called? The fabric controller. The fabric controller is then getting this package and trying to deploy it and create new images and programming the network environment, programming the load balancers and stuff like that. So now I started the uploading process, okay? The uploading process will take a few minutes maybe, and what we can see is that I already prepared a slot here, which one is it? Music Store Tech Days, here. Music Store Tech Days. And I'm using exactly this hosted service to deploy my MVC Music Store application into it. So at the end, we will have something like mvc-mstd.cloudup.net. Okay? So it's still uploading. Seems the internet connection is doing well, but a little bit slow, but that's okay. What does it mean if we have domains like blah, 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 dot cloudup dot net? What does that mean? That you should immediately go to your DNS provider and map your own DNS or your own domain onto this one. SSL certificates, anyone? Cookie sharing, anyone? You don't want to use .cloudup.net in your production environment. You should not use this URL. You need to map it to your DNS entry. Okay? So, let's take a look at that. So, I'm using DNS Park. And let's go to DNS Park. Let's go to sign in. Okay. Holy cow. Secret. No. So yes. No. Christia. Thanks. N-I-A. Oh no. PC. Let's try it again. So, here we can go to DNS hosting. Yeah, it's sluggish. So here we can see that I have a bunch of blah, blah, blah cloudup.net applications or hosted services mapped to my actual domain. So for example, musicstore.thinkazure.net goes to mvcmusicstore-northcloudup.net. Or, I don't know, ugs.thinkazure.net goes to thinkazure.cloudup.net. And now you can see that a number of domain mappings or domain or subdomain entries are going to the same Windows Azure hosted service, to thinktecturecloudup.net. Okay? And this is one of the ways where, how we can achieve multi-tenancy. A poor man's multi-tenancy. So I have one hosted service that may be hosting several roles and several instances of these roles. But on this hosted service, I can put a lot of applications and can map it through DNS to my actual customers' or clients' domains. Right? We will look at that in just a few moments. Oh, it's still uploading. So that will take time. And I guess, and I foresee it will take longer than this session will take. Okay? So you don't have to do it this way all the time. So what you can do is you can perfectly use scripts to deploy. So for example, if we go here, if we say open file location. So what I have here is a bunch of batch files, for example. So this is a batch file that is using the cspec command from the Windows Azure SDK. And with that, I am creating that already mentioned cs.pkg package. This package is packaged so that the fabric controller in the cloud can understand that. The next step would be to deploy that to blob storage. There is a nice little command line tool called Blobber, which was written by our friend Clemens Fastas, which you can use in order to push any blob into the specified blob storage. When this blob is uploaded, you are going to tell Windows Azure with a tool, for example, like CSManage, hey, dude, this is a new hosted service. There is the deployment package behind that URL. Just go ahead and deploy a new instance of my application into this hosted service. And then it's doing his work. So you can completely ignore the UI of Visual Studio. You can completely automate this. Whether it's through these shell scripts here or command line scripts, or whether that's through PowerShell. There are also PowerShell commandlets available for free from the DPE folks in Redmond, or some more professional commandlets that also have professional product support from a company called Cerebrata. It's called, let's go to Cerebrata. And they have tools for SQL Azure. They have tools for Windows Azure. They have tools for Azure Storage. And here, for example, the featured product is the Azure Management Commandlets, which you can use in order to fully automate nearly everything inside of your Windows Azure environment. Okay. So did the upload? Oh, it's still uploading. That's taking too long. Okay. Wonderful. So storage. Huh, I tell you, storage can be really, really tedious. A lot of people recommend you, okay, configure your application so that you can put every storage and every diagnostics information, every event log, and put it into Windows Azure Storage, into table storage and or blob storage. Well, that can cause a lot of cost depending on the load that your application may be experiencing. Because, of course, table storage and blob storage and queue storage imposes costs. The amount of memory or the amount of data that is stored in there, plus the so-called transactions, which means the calls into the storage API. Okay? If you do something like, oh, wonderful, I like the idea of loosely coupled processes, and you are using Windows Azure queues as queue storage, and you are polling every half second, polling every half second to a HTTP-based API means that you are doing a call every half second to that API, which means this is a transaction in Azure, transaction in terms of payment transaction, which means you pay for this. If you do this every half second, and if you have four instances of your role, you can do the math now. Okay? So, cost-oriented architecture. Know what you are doing and know what it's going to be printed on your invoice. Okay? That's very important. What I like are super, hyper useful tools. There are tools for talking to storage that one or the other may know. So there's Cloud Storage Explorer. This is a freeware tool or an open source tool created by a community guy called David Pellman. There is another tool called Storage Explorer. This is actually, no. That was like Groundhog Day, huh? Hey, babe, I got you, babe. There is a tool called Cloud Storage Studio, which is from the already mentioned company, where we can now just, for example, pick up any of our accounts, like, ba-bum, where is ThinkTecture? ThinkTecture, and connect to it. And then you have quite a nice UI and view on your table storage, on your queues and on your containers. If you deal a lot with blob storage, what I have here is a Windows Explorer shell extension so that I can just drag and drop, so more or less xcopy deploy my data into Windows Azure Storage. Okay? So here you can see I have mapped several of my blob storage accounts. And now I can just go again to ThinkTecture, to that ThinkTecture account, and get the exact same view for my blob storage containers. Okay? And in there, I can just drill down and see what's happening. So, for example, we should see something like VS Deploy. We should see something like, I don't know, IntelliTrace, which is also empty. Exceptions. There happened some exceptions yesterday when I played around with that stuff. So this is a very, very useful utility in order to see your storage in the cloud as a local, more or less, folder where you can just control C and control V into it or out of it. That's very powerful means, which I will use in just a few moments in order to deploy my application. SQL Azure. Okay. A lot of buzz, a lot of hype. Yes, it is SQL Server in the cloud, but it's not a server, it's service. So there is no dedicated hardware rack for you. There is some kind of logical database for you that you can access, but that's it. And as I already said at the beginning, you need to be aware that you are talking to SQL Azure, because SQL Azure can spit out a little bit different error conditions and a little bit different exceptions that you may be used to from your regular SQL Server. Okay? SQL Azure can be administered by two ways. The first one is the portal. You create the server, well, the logical server there, and the database. And then inside of the database, you usually switch to T-SQL with Management Studio, for example, in order to create the tables, the users, the views, and all the management objects that you will need. Okay? An interesting part is SQL Azure Data Sync. And yes, it's a CDP. That's the first CDP I'm showing, I guess. So SQL Azure Data Sync is available in order to synchronize data from the server here on that laptop with the SQL Server instance or SQL Azure instance in the cloud. So to prove my point, here I have this SQL Azure server, and here I have my MusicStore database, which is just a small one. It's 1 gigabyte maximum, and currently it takes 400 kilobyte. Then there is the local MVC MusicStore database, which is running in SQL Express here as the MVC MusicStore DB. What I can do now with DataSync is, and I already prepared that for you, I can set up synchronization groups. So what I can do here is, here you can actually see that it is using my cloud-based SQL Azure database and the local SQL Express database. I can set up synchronization schedules between the two. Okay? In order for this to work, what I need is a sync agent. So there is this SQL Azure Data Sync Agent, CTP, currently, and it's configured so that my localhost SQL Express MVC Music Store is being synchronized or synchronizable with my SQL Azure database in the cloud. Yeah, question. So the question was, can I do this between SQL Azure and SQL Azure? And the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So it's for on-premise to cloud, for cloud to on-premise, or from, you can actually do on-premise to on-premise, or cloud to cloud. That's a good question. I did not try that. Maybe that's one perfect example of sending an email to the speaker after the conference. But as far as I played around with it today, I guess it's not, but I don't know for sure. Okay. So SQL Azure is surely a very nice thing. It's something that a lot of people want to use and want to play around with. But again, it's not your SQL Server. Even inside of Visual Studio, it doesn't feel like your SQL Server. Even inside of SQL Server Management Studio, right-click and you will see that a lot of those options are just not there, right? Essential features like backup. Well, there is a backup or copy feature, but really enterprise-ready backup is not yet there. You need to invest a little bit on your own in order, for example, use those management commandlets that I have been talking about in order to get the data from SQL Azure, pull it down and then put it, for example, into blob storage again in order to have some kind of poor man's approach to SQL Azure backup. So SQL Azure is nice, but again, on the development side, make sure that you are handling all those transient error conditions. At the end of the slide deck, there is a list of links And there is an article with a code framework that can handle that for us in order to do all this error conditions checking for us. Okay? And on the other side, yes, it's a relational database in the cloud, but it's not yet fully featured as you may expect. Scalability. Huh. Yes, Azure can scale. No, you won't be able today to spin up a new role instance in 2 minutes. So, guesses. In the past 5 months, I did a lot of deployments. What was the average value of deploying a new instance in minutes? Not in hours. In 20? 12? Huh? 20. Okay, so my personal average was 17. Okay? I had good times. Well, I always have good times, but I had good times in deploying. And I'm not sure whether this is by coincidence, but it happened in North Europe data center, where I constantly spun up new instances in 9 minutes. But then I had also situations where I was waiting something like 25. Okay? So yes, they are working on it. I guess this is the correct way to say it. They are aware that there may be a problem with that. And I hope that by the end of this calendar year, or maybe the beginning of next calendar year, hopefully, cross fingers, Daumen drücken, that we will see something around a constant deployment time of, I don't know, 8 minutes, 7 to 8 minutes, which would be fine because we're talking PaaS here and not EaaS. Okay? But just for the others who have not yet played around with it, just make sure that you cannot really super elastic react to super high loads in a very short amount of time. I already talked about the virtual machine size. So if you want to scale up, you can choose higher virtual machine sizes, which also means more RAM, more local storage, more CPU power, and something that a lot of people did not know, more network bandwidth. So the smaller instances are limited in network bandwidth. So if you have to do a lot of data putting in and out or between applications inside of the data center, this may also help you if you choose bigger VM sizes. Okay? So if you have lots of data to shovel back and forth. And of course, one of the most well-known architectural ways of doing scaling is using caching. Yeah. You're welcome. Okay, so his question was, how do I actually do this dynamic scaling or automatic scaling? Okay, so there are two answers to this question. And it's funny that I have prepared part of it. Okay, so here is some lines of code in order to scale out Windows Azure. And the how is not the problem. There is a service management API. This service management API is a REST-based API which can be found at this location. It's fully documented. And there is just a small wrapper around that one. And what I'm doing here is I talk to my service management API for that given service. I tell him to give me the configuration. And afterwards, I update the configuration to, I don't know, instance count of 10. And then I say update. And then the Azure Fabric controller is doing his magic. So that's not a problem at all, right? The question is when, right? And this is actually a business problem. This is not a technical problem, okay? This project I was talking about that I'm currently doing in Germany with the Java stuff and so on, we also created a controlling application for that. And of course, we need to collect technical data, like CPU, like, I don't know, disk I/O, like many other performance counters. But it does not make sense to spin up new instances if my CPU is constantly at 100% or at 90%, because what happens? Denial of service. If somebody detects this, it will stress your application will hog the CPU at 90%, and Azure will keep spawning new instances. So that's denial of costs. So yeah, we need to have quite a clever set of formulas and data, key performance indicators, based on which we actually then calculate and react what to do. So the what part is not dramatic at all or not problematic at all. The how part can be really tricky, and a lot of business rules and business logic can go in there. Okay? That said, there is nothing provided by Microsoft as a monitoring or scaling service, but there are third-party partners and vendors who are offering this, like Azure Watch. There you can completely remote monitor and control your services, and based on those rules for the key performance indicators, spin up or shut down instances. Okay? Great. As we started a little later, I will do a little longer. Is that okay? If you need to go, don't. Okay? But I think we are kind of in time. One word to the NoSQL approach, because this is also a big discussion. Half of the world says, NoSQL kicks ass. The other one says, relational databases is all that I need. Yeah, it's like rest and soap. Huh? Why or? Let's happily live together. Okay? So the NoSQL approach can help you, but you have to severely rethink a lot of things, I tell you. If you are used to relational modeling, if you are used to normal forms, if you are used to eliminate data redundancy, well, in that world, you actually do exactly that. So the NoSQL approach, whether that's a document database or whether it's a name value pair-based database or any other kind of NoSQL storage system, it usually completely contradicts with what we have learned and done for the past years in the SQL world. Okay? So we tried that to apply it in one or the other project where it would have made sense, but the learning curve sometime can be very, 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 very high. So usually for these kind of applications that we are currently running, we use SQL Azure as a relational database service, and then for special use cases and special scenarios, we may move over to NoSQL approach, which then may mean that we're going to Windows Azure Table Storage. So, last but not least, if you listen and if you work with Azure, and you listen to people talking about Azure and presenting Azure, you see that there are two roles, the worker role and the web role. Well, there are three. The VM role. But the VM role is, I'm not sure about the VM role. The VM role seems to give us a virtual machine, but at the end, it's still platform as a service with a virtual machine, right? So the real abstraction from the virtual machine, from the image itself, is the web or the worker role. So, since Azure SDK 1.3, there is a feature that I call Web Worker. It's not an official one, it's just something that I decided to coin it like this. What is the point about it? Okay, so a worker role is usually something where you say, okay, let's create a new worker role, add new project, no, where is it? Here we are. Add new worker role project, blah, 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 worker role, wonderful. So this is everything that's happening here, right? It's one file, it's a class deriving from role entry point, and then you have an on-stop, an on-start, and a run. And then you're doing your work, background work, worker role, okay? That's the whole idea. And this guy is running in a dedicated hosting process. There is no IIS, nothing. Okay? That's a worker role. If we now look at Windows Azure since SDK 1.3, This is a web role. It looks like a common ASP.NET, whatever, web forms or MVC web project. But there is a file called webrole.cs. Webrole.cs was in place before, but since SDK 1.3, this class in its DLL is running in a dedicated worker process or helper process, and the actual web application is running in w3wp.exe, so in IIS. So that means now we have the ability to physically run background code in its own process, which is also monitored by the Windows Azure Fabric Controller, and real web code in IIS. This means cost optimization. In previous times where I just was designing a worker role to do some background work, occasionally, from time to time, I would have used a complete worker role, which means a complete instance, which means at least complete two instances, which means a lot more cost. Now what I can do is I put all my background logic into webrole.cs. And this background logic is then running in its dedicated worker process. And this dedicated worker process is then executing all that stuff. And the real web application is running still in IIS. This means, of course, you need to be aware whether this background logic is not pulling too many resources from your instance, which means disk I/O and or CPU, network I/O, okay? Where I used this the first time was a typical case for a time zone-based cloud system. So it was for the German-speaking time zone, which includes Belgium, obviously, right? So what we did is from 5 in the morning until, I don't know, 2 in the morning, it was everything optimized for the web application, and then based on a timer, from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m., the background worker spawned and was doing database calculations, clean up of the database, generating emails, generating PDFs, sending it out to the customers, and stuff like that. And all with one web role, or as I call it, the web worker role. And if we saw the need for scaling, I just spun up the sample code, or, well, it was embedded into a nice Windows Presentation Foundation application. I just said, okay, spin it up by two instances, and something like 15 to 20 minutes later, we had 3 of our instances in the cloud running instead of 1, and all using this idea of a web worker role. So, and based on this idea of a web worker role, I'm now going to present a deployment mechanism. Okay. The following. I have something running here. It's called the Azure Blob Storage Sites deployment, and it's under thinktecture.cloudapp.net. So let's do a remote desktop into this instance and take a look at how it looks. So this is a web worker, or just a web role. And inside of this web role, there is IIS. Since SDK 1.3, the default, you get full IIS. So this is now my machine in the cloud, by the way. You have to specify that you want remote desktop access when deploying it into the cloud, but now I have full access for watching, for viewing. Do not put your fingers on this image here because it may just be changed for you. Platform as a service, not infrastructure. As you can see, we have mappings, DNS mappings, host header mappings, onto several different IIS websites. So what is happening here is there is a process called Blob Storage Deployment Engine Host. Long name. This one is something that I wrote, and this one was started by a process called the dubaiishost.exe. So this is that worker process, that helper process I was referring to. In this process, the webrole.cs derived class, or the role entry point derived class, is running in that process. Okay? And what we can do now is, and let's hope that the demo gods are still with us. What we can do now is, let's create a new website. Let's just create an empty ASP.NET MVC website. Okay? New project. Web MVC application. Okay. Let's create an internet application. All right. And let's say welcome to Antwerpen. Okay, and to make it fully customized layout, let's call it My Tech Days. Okay, what we are going to do, we build this application and we publish it. I'm going to publish it through the file system. Okay? So let's put it into ctemp publish. Tech Days Belgium live / site. Okay. Publish succeeded. So that means now I have my website published here locally to this folder. What I'm going to do is I'm going to sim it up and I'm going to give it a name that will match a DNS entry and that will be configured as a host header entry in our Azure, instance. So which one do you want to have? Antwerpen.thinkazure.net. Let's look. There's one folder in there. It's Antwerpen.thinkazure.net. Okay. Just to reconfirm, currently we have MS, TDB, blah, 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 UGS, and that's it. So now this is the part that I was referring to all the time of quite easily deploy web applications and website without having to redeploy the whole image, because the whole image should at some point be stable. The service definition of Windows Azure should be stable. And then you may just want to deploy new tenants into your existing Azure deployment. Okay, so let's go to DNS. And in DNS, let's create a new entry. How did I call it? Antwerpen, huh? Antwerpen.thinkazure.net. And let's map it. Oh, it's a CNAME record. And let's map it to... to ThinkTecture Cloud UpNet. Okay, Antwerpen.thinkazure.net will be mapped to ThinkTecture.cloudup.net, and then there the host header will be analyzed and used. Okay, edit, which means we should be in here. Okay. Whew. Hopefully this works. With all the networks problems we had, but so now this application in the cloud is watching a deployment folder in blob storage. Okay? So if I now go and copy this one up here, you saw it? Now it created a new website and we should be able to access it through a correctly typed URL. And now that took us 20 seconds to deploy an ASP.NET application and still running in Windows Azure. And as this whole deployment feature this whole deployment subsystem is now stable inside of a Windows Azure role. And I'm using this as a startup task as well. Each and every instance that I'm now going to spin up newly will be configured the exact same way. Okay? So that means if I now spin up new instances, like 10 new instances, I have to wait something like 25 minutes for these additional 9 instances. But after that, it will take maybe 15 to 20 seconds in order to completely pre-populate them with those existing applications. And that's a system that we have been using in 2 projects, and this is very, very high fidelity, and it's a very, very nice approach where you can actually just say, hey, let's use the well-known ASP.NET websites and web projects. Let's just zip it up based on a naming convention, obviously. Let's put it into our blob storage, and then only a few moments later, it will be all there if we have correctly mapped it and configured it in our DNS. So DNS is actually a very important thing, as I already said a few moments and a few minutes before. You don't want to expose .cloudapp.net. You want to expose your own domain and your own subdomain, right? And this makes it even more obvious, because then you can have a, well, I call it a poor man's multi-tenancy solution in the cloud without having to go through the whole process of always and going always and always and always through the long winded way of deploying new images and new Azure role instances. Cool. So yes, Azure is here. Cloud computing is here. And yes, we still have a long way to go. I think the Windows Azure Services platform, or Windows Azure platform, is really nice. It has a holistic offering of different services, including the App Fabric with the service bus, the access control service, which is really very powerful. We have SQL Azure as a relational database service. And last but not least, as seen, we have Windows Azure Compute and Windows Azure Storage, which we can use in order to run our applications and services in the cloud, and in order to store our data in the cloud. But if we have cloud computing version 1, maybe we have Windows Azure, 0.8, maybe 0.9. A lot has to evolve, especially the tools, the development tools, the runtime tools, the monitoring tools, and I'm sure they will. But they have. Okay? And always keep in mind, not everything may need to go into the cloud. Why isn't that machine in the cloud? The boss asks, and the important fact is the boss has the tie. Huh? Very important. The boss goes away, the employee says, huh? Huh. Well, it's a dishwasher. Okay, so not every CIO, CXO level should think too much and too deep about the cloud. Only where it makes sense and when it makes sense. And I thank you for coming, and I thank you for bearing with the technical problems we had at the beginning, but I think it turned out quite well afterwards. If you have questions, you know my email address, christian.via@thinktecture.com. And all that's left to say for me is have a safe trip home. Thank you for coming to Tech Days. Maybe seeing you next year, and thank you for listening.